Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Operation Confidence Radio Talk Show, America's Invisible Heroes, with Consuela Mackey, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to America's Invisible Heroes, a show dedicated to our veterans and their families. And yes, I'm your host, Consuela Mackey, Executive Director of a grassroots nonprofit organization called Operation Confidence. For those who may be new to the show, Operation Confidence Invisible Heroes strives to provide a platform for veterans to be able to share their experiences, heartfelt stories, challenges, and accomplishments. Now, I'd like to introduce you to my wonderful co-host, Air Force veteran and Operation Confidence board member, Matt Davison, U.S. Army Reserve and board member, Charles Whitehead, Brooke Gadaski, board member and announcer, Taylor Marcellus, board member and also an announcer, and Carol Seeger, she's a segment host with Carol's Corner, and not least is our dear heart, Martha Elaine Varela. She's over our women's veterans segment called Lifeline for Women Vets. I also want to thank our LA Talk listeners and viewers. Now I'm going to turn this over to Matt.
Okay, today I want to talk especially to military medics and corpsmen, because they can step right into fulfilling careers caring for fellow veterans through the VA's new partnership with the Department of Defense called SkillBridge. Finding fulfilling post-military careers that use their healthcare skills can be difficult for these experienced professionals who have plentiful experiences but no professional license. It causes medics and corpsmen a lot of distress when they get out. They have this high level of skill, but they're not able to translate that into anything meaningful to them. SkillBridge can help prevent that from happening. During the last 180 days of military service, medics and corpsmen accepted into SkillBridge are placed in residencies at VA to train as intermediate care technicians. The residency includes a comprehensive training program, mentoring, coaching, job shadowing, and more. A state-of-the-art virtual simulator allows them to practice skills like suturing, splinting, and casting. The experiences that you can have at SkillBridge are unlimited. The focus is not to guide you on what we want, but to guide you on what you want. An integral part of the healthcare team, ICT, often begin their careers in the emergency department, but there are also opportunities to branch off into other disciplines, such as geriatrics, specialty care, and primary care. You will be coached and mentored to make sure that the shoe fits. And we're gonna make the program work for you. But to learn more about SkillBridge and how it can benefit both military medics and corpsmen, contact us at 800-455-0057. That's SkillBridge at 800-455-0057.
Oh, great. That was great information, Matt, as always. Now, Taylor, you have some informative information. Take it away, girlfriend.
Sure, Connie. Living well with a disability. To our veterans and civilians, adapting to life with a disability is never easy, but there are ways to help yourself cope with limitations, overcome challenges, and build a rewarding life. While you can't go back in time to a healthier you or wish away your limitations, you can change the way you think about and cope with your disability. You are still in control of your life, and there are many ways to improve your independence, sense of empowerment, and outlook. No matter your disability, it is entirely possible to overcome the challenges you face and enjoy a full and fulfilling life. Most of us expect to live long, healthy lives. So when you're hit by a disabling illness or injury, it can trigger a range of unsettling emotions and fears. You may wonder how you'll be able to work, find, or keep a relationship, or even be happy again. But while living with a disability isn't easy, it doesn't have to be a tragedy. And you are not alone. Millions of people have traveled this road before you. According to the CDC, it estimates that 1 in 5 Americans is disabled and found a way to not just thrive, but survive. You can too. Just look at me.
Okay. Taylor, you have an extraordinary background. Why don't you share a little bit about with who you are and what you do before we move on to our guest for today?
Of course. So I was diagnosed with osteogenesis imperfecta. In layman's terms, it's brittle bones. That means that the bones in my body doesn't produce or it produces poor quality of collagen, which is needed to build strong bones. With that being said, I do not walk and I utilize a wheelchair for my mobility. Throughout my academic career, I've learned about myself and being immersed in those spaces that they weren't built for me. It didn't feel like I was invited or welcomed into those spaces. However, I did learn about strength and determination and tenacity to never give up. In college, I depended solely on the disability, solely on the Center of Disability for refuge and solace. And yet I still, even in that space, I didn't feel like I belonged. It wasn't until one day I had the opportunity to volunteer to work with veterans with disabilities as an Operation Confidence Executive Assistant. In that role, I was able to work side by side with Ms. Consuela Mackey, and she gave me the support and the trust, and she trusted my judgment and my recommendations for outreach and community engagement. That was something that I didn't have because I was used to people always telling me what to do and I just followed along. She trusted in me. And because of that, I was able to trust myself and my capabilities. And through Operation Confidence, I've grown professionally and personally. And with that, I wanted to try something I've never done before. And that was to participate and win the Miss Wheelchair California 2017 title. And as a title holder, I was able to utilize my platform and bring awareness to veterans with disabilities and to build even more confidence in myself. This led to my interest in working with the military, where I am currently working on an Air Force-based installation. My current role includes working with families who are in crisis, and my team and I work to provide preventative and supportive services along with classes and counseling. Looking back, I can only attest me being here and making those achievements. I contribute that to God for being with me every step of the way. I couldn't have done it without him. And even in those quiet moments, in those moments where I felt alone and inadequate, he continues to hear me and guide me along this path. And I am so grateful that he's qualified me, someone who is unqualified. I can't.
Yes, you are.
And I am excited to see where he leads me next. And that's my, you know, who I am in a nutshell.
That is so fabulous. That's my baby girl. Isn't she precious?
Thank you.
We still love you so much.
Very.
Isn't that beautiful? She's amazing. She is just an amazing young lady. And I'm so happy to call her one of mine. She's a team player. We have a lot to do for our veterans. Well, I'm going to turn it over to you now, Brooke. Can you please introduce our segment host, and she'll take it from there?
You got it, Connie. Today, team member, U.S. Army veteran, Martha Elena Varela, has a monthly segment entitled Lifeline for Women Vets. Her guest today is U.S. Army veteran Captain Monique Spaulding. Take it away, Martha.
Thank you. Yes, today's guest is Monique Spaulding, who is a retired captain of the U.S. Army and having served her country as a combat veteran in both Iraq and Afghanistan. She is the CEO of SPMC International LLC, a government procurement company for transportation and logistics. During the COVID-19 shutdown in 2020, SPMC International LLC launched an e-commerce side to her business called Government Contracting University, or GCU, where she teaches small business owners how to position their entity appropriately so that they can bid on government contracts. Monique is also the senior pastor of the International House of Prayer Soaking Center, IHOPSC, a church planting project of the Lord Jesus Christ on 39.55 acres of land in Lake George, Colorado. Monique holds a Master of Arts degree in Bible and Theology and most recently has been accepted to Oral Roberts University Doctor of Ministry program. Monique was born, raised, and saved by the Lord Jesus Christ in Chicago, Illinois. She is single with no children and currently resides in Kansas City, Missouri. To contact Monique, Monique is available on Facebook and Clubhouse and or can be reached by email at spmcinternational@gmail.com. Thank you, Monique, for joining us today. Monique and I have actually had the pleasure of working together about 6 months ago now. I think it's been roughly since we first contacted one another and kind of crossed paths. And Monique actually and I had some, we got some new certification under our belts, right, Monique? We both are graduates of the Boots to Business program, business development program, which we're going to talk a little bit later about in the interview. So Monique is just a wealth of information and knowledge, and I'm so happy and thankful that you could make it today, Monique. So thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you, Martha. Thank you, Miss Mackey, and to everyone here at LA Talk Radio.
Can you turn your mic up a little, honey? You're a little low.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's much better. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, so Monique, being born and raised in Chicago, Illinois, I didn't realize we share that same, share a similar background in that I was born and raised in the Midwest. I see that you currently reside in Kansas City, Missouri, and tell me a little bit about what your childhood was like kind of growing up in the Midwest, and a little bit about when you joined the service.
Well, actually, I was raised a Catholic, under the Catholic faith, and raised on the south side of Chicago. And so it was really very a loving environment. My mother, single parent, my parents divorced when I was at the age of two. So my mother raised me. I did have interaction with my father because every weekend we would go over to my grandma's house to give my mother a little break from raising my brother and I as a single mother or divorcee. And so, but nonetheless, I had a really very developed and very strict environment. Back then, you know, the nuns at the Catholic school could take you in the cloakroom and take the ruler out and tan your legs, you know, and then when they would tell your parents and you would get it when you went home. And if the neighbor saw you, you know, and told your parents, you'd get a couple of more whippings too, you know. So, you know, I was raised in that environment, you know, where, you know, it just was not tolerated. It was zero tolerance for just ungodly behavior. So having gone to Catholic school in my grammar school, as well as all girl private high school, I'm a graduate of Elizabeth Seton High School, renamed as Seton Academy, but it's currently closed right now. It closed down a couple of years ago. But nonetheless, you know, just really had a very good education. And then of course, went on to college. And I am also a graduate, a 1993 graduate of Brandeis University, predominantly Jewish institution in Waltham, Massachusetts. And obtained my degree in politics and with the certification in legal studies. And it was my dream, I thought, to go off to be this amazing attorney. And that's what I wanted when I was a little girl. You know, when you're a child, everyone just kind of asks you, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, and growing up in Chicago, you know, I didn't, never lived in the projects or anything like that. My mother always had a wonderful, nice apartment complex for us to live in. And my grandmother was a homeowner. So I was used to being around property owners, and even my grandparents owned property, rental properties over on the west side of Chicago. And so I just remember I have so many things I could tell you about my childhood about Chicago. But nonetheless, graduated from Brandeis and just thought I was going to be this amazing going to law school. And I applied to I don't know how many law schools, and I was not accepted to none of them. I mean, nobody accepted me, and it was so depressing. I was just so depressed, and went home after living in Boston for 10 years, went home in the summer of 1993, thinking that I was going to get accepted to law school, and I didn't get accepted. And then, you know, my world just kind of spun around. But I really do believe that that was the hand of God on my life, because it was in that season of my life that I actually came to know the Lord Jesus Christ as my personal savior. And so I was saved by him and just began to live a more godly, sanctified, holy lifestyle and things of that nature, one that is approving unto my Heavenly Father. And so with that being said, I began to pray about his will for my life. And he led me to the military because I still had this dream, I thought, of going to law school. I was gonna, now that I had Jesus, it was just like, oh, I didn't get accepted before, but now that I have Jesus, I know that the Lord is gonna do it for me. I'm gonna go to law school. And I was like, but how can I go and be able to afford it? And Illinois has the Illinois Veterans Grant. I'm not sure if you're aware of that. If anyone's watching from the state of Illinois, please research that, because that is a free grant that will pay for all tuition and fees for you to go to. Then they have a list of schools that they approve of on that grant. But nonetheless, it would have approved for me to go to the University of Illinois Law School, totally free of charge. So with that being said, I looked into the military, and that's how I found out this information. And at the time, I was approaching my 34th or 35th birthday. And I was just like, Lord, you know, am I supposed to, you know, go to the military at 30, 34, 35 years old with, you know, 18 and 19 year old, you know? And I'm just praying and praying and praying. And I said, well, if it's not your will, you know, shut every door down if it's not your will. But I had to lose some weight before, the recruiter wouldn't even let me take the test. I had to lose some weight before I took the test. And long story short, was able to get an age waiver, lost the weight, took the test, was able to get an age waiver, and showed up to my basic training on March 3rd, 1998. And regulation, the age waiver was because according to the regulation of the military, you have to be at basic training before your 35th birthday. And I turned 35 February 2nd of 1998, and my basic training didn't start until March 3rd. So with that being said, I joined in the Chemical Corps, and a shout out to all the Dragon soldiers that are out there that are chemical. But that's basically how I got into the Army.
You go, girl.
Wow, that's great. and you know, and not to mention, you know, that you are a high ranking, you know, retired military member as well. And so that speaks to your leadership, right? At coming in at an older age, but, you know, really being able to maximize the time that you spent there and really exercise that leadership. So that was definitely one of the things that I admired about you when we first met and started speaking about this other passion that you have around business development. Tell us a little bit how you kind of got into this new world of, you know, helping others that our small business owners kind of build their business, connect to government contracts. And I know that you were really helpful to me, kind of giving me a lot of different resource information, because we, you know, I'm also a small business owner, and having both taken the Boots to Business veteran business course, they have kind of one small piece of that government contract, you know, financial resource kind of information. But tell me a little bit, tell us a little bit about how you got into that niche of helping others develop their small businesses.
Wait a minute, Martha, before Reverend Spaulding moves on, I'd like to hear a little bit about what rank. Was that captain that you made?
Yes, it was. I entered the Army as an E4 in 1998. And back in 2005, the Lord Jesus Christ blessed me to be promoted by President George W. Bush in a direct commission. I became a second lieutenant with about, I want to say, 8.5 years of enlisted experience. And then I retired out in September of 2012 as a captain.
You go. I think that's absolutely fabulous.
Yes.
I wanted our listeners to know that, you know.
Yeah, I also received a certificate of appreciation from President Barack Obama as well for my service.
Whoa, all right.
Yeah, you can't leave that out. I couldn't leave that out.
No, that's so important. Everybody needs to hear this. This is absolutely wonderful. And also, just before you move on, I wanted to let you know that I, too, was raised in the Catholic school with the nuns, giving you swats and stuff like that.
That's right. Those nuns didn't play. And then not only that, do you remember when we learned how to write cursive writing, how it had to
You had that ruler wrapped on your knuckles.
It had to be perfect.
Yeah, exactly. All right, it was some good times. But anyway, go ahead on, Martha. I just wanted to share that with the captain.
Sure. Tell us a little bit, Monique, about the work you do with small business development.
Yes. So as you were saying in my introduction, first, let me just start off by saying this. When I was in Afghanistan, I was a transportation and logistics officer working under the Army Material Command there in combat with the 3rd of the 401st Army Field Support Battalion, which is also underneath the Army Sustainment Command, which is underneath the Army Material Command. So with that being said, the Combined Joint Task Force 82nd was on the ground when I arrived on the ground. My assignment there in Afghanistan was to be the transportation and logistics officer for the battalion, which had a battalion of approximately a little bit over 1,400 people. Now, I am also anti-terrorism force protection level 2 certified. And when my battalion commander found that out, he made me the officer in charge of force protection. So then it became my responsibility to protect everybody, in addition to being the transportation logistics officer and the chemical officer and the container control officer. And my duties just went on and on and on. I was a second lieutenant at that time in combat. So this idea of government contracting was birthed in me because I was responsible for working with the program managers of the various prime contractors that were on the ground assisting us in combat. I mean, all of us know, even if we're never in combat, you know that there are even here in CONUS, here in the United States, and for those of you, that's a military term we say for US, it's called CONUS. Those of us who are here in the United States, there's still civilian contractors that work on the bases to assist us to do our missions and things of that nature. So I was working with all of these prime contractors from in the companies called, you know, Lockheed Martin, SAIC, KBR, Mantech, BAE Systems, and you know, these are, and some of them retired military, retired lieutenant colonels and things of that nature. And matter of fact, there was a retired lieutenant colonel of SAIC who was on the ground. He was the program manager he wasn't military there in the military capacity. He was there for the company SAIC, and they had won a government contract to support us in issuing out the MRAPs, the mine resistant ambush protection vehicles. And so it was my job to assist him in getting, you know, the battalion commander is asking me every day in our briefings, you know, Spalding. And then in the military, for those of you who are listening that are not military, we go by our last names. So, you know, he's asking me every day in the briefing, Spalding, how's it going? How's the mission going? Spalding, are we on task? Spalding, you know, what's an update? And the program manager is there, but he doesn't have any employees. You know, so I'm just like, sir, it's going well. As far as I know, we're on task to go, you know, but this retired colonel, I trusted in his rank that he knew what he was doing. He was a retired lieutenant colonel and he was there as the program manager and we were working together to get this mission done. And nonetheless, when the time came to do this, I had never heard of this company, SAIC. And so I just did a little Google search. I went to Uncle Google, as they say, and I did a little Google search on this company, SAIC, and there was government contracts are there when they are awarded, they go on the internet, they're publicized. So, you know, I went on the internet, did a little research, found the contract that was awarded. And my God, was I blown away. Now he was a subcontractor. So this company won a contract from, it didn't say who the prime contractor was. Prime contractor is someone who wins the contract from the government. So a company won a contract from the government and then subcontracted it out to SAIC to actually do the work on the ground to support the military. And the contract, subcontract, was for over $700 million.
Whoa.
It blew my mind. So if that company is making $700 million and they're a sub, then you can only imagine what the prime contractor was making. And I was like, I began to pray. I was like, Lord, my God, you have to teach me about this, you know, and so that's what I call, I got bit by the government contracting bug, you know, back in combat in Afghanistan, but also at the same time, being the transportation and logistics officer, I really enjoyed what I was doing. I really enjoyed the missions and just assisting the Department of Defense, being, you know, working for the Department of Defense as a commissioned officer. I just really enjoyed being, you know, on the battlefield, just doing my missions and protecting soldiers and getting the work done and for on behalf of my country, the United States of America, you know. Right. And so with that being said, after combat, just came, went back. I was stationed in Colorado Springs at Fort Carson at the time. And so went back to Colorado and just began to just dream about having a company, a transportation and logistics company. And because I was still in the Army, I began to really research it and get into it. But when you are government, you are not allowed to be a prime contractor, especially with me being an officer, because that's a conflict of interest. Excuse me. So I would have had, while I was in the military, I would have had to be a subcontractor, but nonetheless, didn't, you know, work out with my missions and getting my business started and things of that nature, you know, while I was in the military, but it was something that I just kept dreaming about and kept visualizing for myself. And nonetheless, retired out September of 2012, and then relocated to Kansas City, Missouri. And I have to give a shout out to the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes, home of, you know, and so came here to Kansas City. And nonetheless, in 2012, April of 2017, started my LLC, SPMC International LLC, to do transportation and logistics for the government. And then I learned how, you know, nobody taught me what I needed to know. You know, I learned it, you know, by going to webinars, by contacting the SBA, you know, and things of that nature. I went to the SBDC webinar, and it was alive back then, of course, and got on board with some people that taught me how to do what I now teach other small businesses how to do. And so with that being said, that's really how I got into government contracting. And then with the pandemic, what happened was it was trying, you know, kind of difficult. Now, in between the pandemic and 2017, I actually went to theology school. And so I put my business on the side, you know, and I didn't work it. You know, it was established as a legitimate LLC in the state of Missouri. But nonetheless, you know, I put it on the side and really wasn't working my business because I was focused on theology. So I obtained my Master's of Arts in Bible and Theology because the Lord has called me to be a pastor on a church planting project in Lake George, Colorado, on 39 and a half acres of land that he has given me.
Yeah, so, it's so amazing.
Yeah.
You're just a superwoman. You know that, girlfriend? I think it's wonderful.
Yeah.
I hate to cut you off, but we got a little bit more to do on the show before it comes to an end. But look for my email. I mean, I want to share with you what Operation Confidence is all about. We definitely need your support on helping us to get those government grants and other grants that are out there. So you seem like you have your hand on all of it. We want to really make sure that we connect. And you got to come back on the show again.
Yes, you got to come back and finish the conversation.
Sorry. I didn't mean to take up all the time, but
no. But yeah. Well, I think it's wonderful. I mean, we want to hear more. You know, but time
I would love to come back. Thank you so much.
Please do, and I look forward to having you. And you know that Martha has a segment, so it's on every week. So whenever you're available, you're always welcome. And look, as I said, look for my email for sure.
Okay. Ms. Mackey, I just wanted to clarify. Now, there's a difference between grants and government contracts.
Okay.
Okay. So if your organization is nonprofit, then those are grants. I can give you a connection that will help you concerning grants. But what I do, what my company does on the e-commerce side, is help people win actual they're for-profit small businesses that go after and bid on the government contracts.
Gotcha. Oh, I understand the bidding. Right. Level. Right. Well, I'm still introduce you to it and hopefully I'll get your guidance.
Okay? Oh, yeah. I would love to know more about your organization. I've already I've shared out the broadcast on my Facebook page. I've posted.
All right.
I've posted the logo of LA Talk Radio and the Operation logo as well. So, you know, there are some of my friends there watching.
They're listening and watching, huh?
And I even have I have friends on the West Coast that are tuning in as well.
All right. I'm so awesome. Happy to hear that.
Thank you, Monique. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. And everyone can see now why I just love you. And I've been, like I said, in contact with you. We you know, vibe and share and get, she's such a wonderful resource. So you'll definitely have to come back. Thank you again for sharing your story today, Monique.
Absolutely wonderful. We were to have Kevin Lanowski on today, but he's going to come on next week. So we're going to move right along and have Taylor to introduce Carol's Corner.
Yes.
You are, sweetheart, Carol.
Are you listening? Waiting for me?
Yeah.
Carol?
Carol?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. One moment, Carol. We're going to introduce you. Go ahead, Taylor.
Okay.
Carol is a former real estate broker, radio host on KCSN Concert Hall, and currently a writer for theater and cultural reviews for two local newspapers, Jewish Life News and her blog, Carol's Culture Corner. Carol, take it away.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm going to tell you about Clayton Schenkenberg. He was born in 1917, died April 17, 2020 at a San Diego senior care facility at the ripe old age of 103 and was believed to be America's oldest Pearl Harbor survivor. He followed his older brother into the Navy and was sent to Pearl Harbor into torpedo work. In between, he experienced one of the most fateful days in modern United States history, the December 7th 1941 naval base at Pearl Harbor that led to the United States involvement in World War II. He was a Navy torpedo man at a submarine base and volunteered to drive a train loaded with the underwater missiles away from strafing Japanese airplanes, after which he ran to an armory, grabbed a rifle, and started shooting back. After the war, he stayed in the Navy for two more decades, got married, raised seven children, and eventually settled in San Diego, where he had a second career as a high school custodian. Schenkelberg was born a year before the Spanish flu swept this country, which he never got. But believe it or not, his final year included a run-in with the current pandemic, COVID-19. He caught it, but believe it or not, he didn't even get sick, his family members said. Several of Schenkelberg's descendants followed him into the Navy. One great-grandson, Patrick, who is still on duty duty or active duty, arranged for a flag to be flown in his honor at various places in Pearl Harbor, including over the submarine base where Schenkelberg, his great-grandfather, worked when the United States was attacked in Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941. What an amazing man.
That was. That's some good information. He was an amazing man. Thank you so much, Carol. Now, come on, Charles. You going to give us a little hot news?
Hot news. Like the sun with hot sauce on it. You know, it's always hot, you know. Anyway, today's hot news is about the importance of physical exercise. To our veterans with limited mobility, but would like to have a successful fitness and exercise program, you must first start by getting a medical clearance. That's important. Talk to your doctor, physical therapist, or other healthcare provider about, you know, activities suitable for your medical condition or mobility use or your mobility issue before starting a fitness program. Building strength and fitness is important for everyone, but exercise is especially important for people with physical disabilities. Believe me, I know. I'm one of them. A population which has a higher rate of obesity than the public as a result of low activity, according to the American Journal of Preventive Medicine, is people with physical disabilities. When we exercise, our bodies release endorphins that energize your mood, relieve stress, boost your self-esteem, and trigger an overall sense of well-being. An injury does not mean your mental and emotional health is doomed to decline, that's for sure. While some injuries respond best to total rest, most simply require you to reevaluate your exercise routine with help from your doctor or PT. Regardless of your age, current physical condition, and whether you exercise in the past or not, there are plenty of ways to overcome your mobility issues to reap the physical, mental, and emotional rewards of exercising. Get it in. Get in the gym if you can.
That's right. Thank you so much, Charles. That was great. Take it away, Brooke.
Now it's time to hand it back over to Matt so that he can help us acknowledge a special American invisible hero. Matt?
Thank you, Brooke. An Army medic who received a Medal of Honor for picking up a fallen soldier's rifle and using it to protect his wounded comrades during the Vietnam War has died, according to the Congressional Medal of Honor Society. Charles Hagemeister, 74, died Wednesday in Leavenworth, Kansas, the Society announced that day. Specialist Fourth Class Hagemeister was a medic with the headquarters company, 1st Battalion, 5th Cavalry Regiment, 1st Cavalry Division, Air Mobile, in Vietnam's Binh Dinh province during an attack on the night of March 20th, 1967. Hagemeister's platoon came under heavy fire from three sides by enemy forces occupying well-concealed fortified positions and supported by machine guns and mortars, according to his medalist citation. Seeing two of his comrades seriously wounded, Higemeister raced through the deadly hail of fire to help. After learning that the platoon leader and several other soldiers had been wounded, he crawled forward under fire to render aid, the citation states. At one point in the battle, Higemeister seized a rifle from a fallen comrade, killed a sniper and three other enemy soldiers who were attempting to encircle his position, and silenced an enemy machine gun before securing help from a nearby platoon to evacuate the wounded, according to the citation. Higemeister's repeated heroic and selfless actions at the risk of his life saved the lives of many of his comrades and inspired their actions. In a July 1968 interview with the Army Digest, cited by the Medal of Honor Society, Higemeister said, "The pressure of crisis situation makes you realize what you're made of. If you do your job and a little bit for somebody else, you'll usually come through."
Oh, that's great. Thank you, Matt. Before we start winding down, Taylor, you have a little bit more information to give us about, you go ahead and share it with our audience.
Of course, Scotty. Employment discrimination based on a real or perceived disability is a violation of California state and federal law. And in most cases, it is unlawful for an employer to discriminate against an applicant because of his or her physical and mental disability. Here are some useful tips for employers to keep in mind when interviewing and hiring individuals with disabilities. An individual can disclose their disability. However, the employer does not have the right to ask about your disability during the hiring process before a job offer is made. The individual has a right to request legitimate and reasonable accommodations to successfully perform their duties. Once an employer has hired someone with a disability, the real work begins. As an employer, you can create an inclusive environment. Don't focus on the limitations of the person, but rather highlight the individuality of the person and their unique qualities and what they bring to the company or organization. As an employer can welcome those with disabilities a seat at the table, trusting that their opinions and ideas are appreciated and valued. Also, it is important to create an advisory group to incorporate in these companies or organizations for educational purposes and to create dialogue to remove the stigma employers and employees have regarding those with disabilities. And as an employer, it is beneficial to be willing to listen and be able to identify and address their own personal biases towards individuals with disabilities. Remember, we want to celebrate our differences, celebrate our contributions, experiences, and the impact that we bring to the workforce. This will improve overall productivity and promote a better work environment. It will also foster inclusivity. Employers champion for those with disabilities to help change the narrative. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. That was great information. Well, Brooke, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thanks, Connie. Before Ms. Connie closes, I'd like to remind our listeners about our amazing advertisement rates. We have 10-second and 30-second advertisement slots available. Please email info@operationconfidence.org for more information. That email address again, info@operationconfidence.org. Also, I'd like to inform our viewers and radio listeners about Amazon Smile. When making your next purchase on Amazon, please go to Amazon Smile and type in Operation Confidence in the Choose Your Organization donation box. Amazon will make a small donation to Operation Confidence.
All right. And before we start closing out, I want to give a shout out and a humble thanks to Paralyzed Veterans of America for becoming our first sponsor. Is that great or what? Let's give a yay.
I have a video too, you know, so I can show that video, you know.
Why don't,
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Hold on. Let's see here. You guys see my screen?
Yeah.
All righty. Let me let it run. Paralyzed Veterans. I'm a member of that. Here we go.
Long Beach PVA, California chapter USA. The city by the waterfront, where the veterans work and play. Long Beach PVA, California chapter USA. The city by the waterfront, where the veterans work and play. Long Beach PVA,
Long Beach, Long Beach,
California chapter.
Long Beach, Long Beach,
Long Beach PVA,
Long Beach, Long Beach,
California chapter.
And Charles wrote the theme song for that piece. Isn't that great?
I will always have a special place in my heart.
Whoops.
I've been coming to Scotland since I was a small boy.
Oops, sorry about that.
Yeah, as I was saying, Charles, he wrote the theme song for that piece, right?
It's a spinoff from Downtown Long Beach.
Right.
The original song is Downtown Long Beach. If you get a chance, go to YouTube, check it out. Charles Whitehead, Downtown Long Beach. But or if you have an Alexa, say, Alexa, play Downtown Long Beach for me. It'll play it. You know.
All right. And Charles will be coming on also with a monthly segment on entertainment and what else, Charles, you said?
Yeah, so I'll have some guys that are in sports and music and all of that stuff.
Right.
So
okay. Well, as we say goodbye, I want to remind our listeners and our viewers that the main reason, purpose for Operation Confidence to have our American Invisible Heroes is to raise awareness about our mission, which is to provide stable housing with a wide range of supportive services, including employment opportunities for veterans and for those who may have experienced homelessness. So if anyone out there in radio land and out there in Facebook Live land wants to get involved with our grassroots efforts, please contact us at info@operationconfidence.org. Once again, info@operationconfidence.org. And please visit our website, www.operationconfidence.org, because we have a great resource page with some amazing information. So check out our website as well. Well, this concludes the show for today. We want to thank our guest, Captain Spaulding, for your wonderful information. We learned so much. And you're going to come back, huh, girlfriend? Yeah, I love it. Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure.
And Monique, really quickly, Consuela has indicated that she's giving away a free copy, an electronic copy of her book, Seven Secrets to Government Contracting. So Monique, they go to the link bit.ly/7secrets2021. So anyone who's listening, you can find her on Facebook, get a free copy of her ebook.
Can you give that again, please?
Sure. It's bit.ly/7secrets2021.
Great. Thank you. And this concludes our show for today. Make sure you tune in next Sunday from 2 o'clock to about 2:50, 2:51 for another Invisible Heroes. Thank you. Goodbye, everyone.
All right, now.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, everyone. Thank you.
And Charles, let's give the famous send-off
to Operation Confidence Radio Talk Show, America's Invisible Heroes, with Consuela Mackey, only on LA Talk Radio.
Bye-bye.